Good morning, everybody. It's truly an honor and a privilege to be brought out here to the shul. It's my first time in Bell Harbor, and it's very beautiful to actually meet the community. You know, the pasuk says, "Lule sarascha sha'ashuai azavadati ba'ani." I sort of feel that when we're 2 days before Tisha B'Av, and we feel the churban, we feel the destruction, but lule sarascha sha'ashuai, for the fact that we had the Torah that was always there for us, it was always there to make us happy and to make people smile and make people be a little bit excited, even in time of Churban. We would be lost in our depression. We would get totally lost and thrown off in the way we lead our lives. You know, the Chidah writes in one of his Svarim on Parshas Balak, the Chidah says, what does it mean, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkan Osechi Yisrael? So obviously this is a Pashup shot in the Pasuk. It means, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, it's a beautiful thing that we have, but the Knesias, but the Midrashos, that people are learning, people are davening. But the Chidah adds what it means, maybe perhaps beyond the regular pshat, beyond the regular level of interpretation, but the Chidah explains, Ma tovu ohalecha Yaakov, how wonderful it is, how lucky we are, that we have ohalecha Yaakov, that we have places to learn, that we have opportunities to learn Torah together, to study Mishkan Osecha Yisrael. When we have that opportunity, it's even greater than having the Mishkan itself, than having a Beis HaMikdash. We can find comfort in ourselves, that although we might be in a state of churban, we might be in a situation where we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, but we have the Ohalecha Yaakov, we have the opportunity to learn together. So, I chose an appropriate theme to speak about, and that is the Mishnah in yesterday's Pirkei Avos. There's a beautiful Mishnah in yesterday's Pirkei Avos, and I just want to talk about why it's significant, and particularly at this time of year, to give some thought and some attention to this Mishnah and explain a little bit of the context of where this Mishnah is coming from. We have a Mishnah, if you look on number one on the source sheet, the Mishnah says, Hu Haya Omer. So whenever we have a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that tells us Hu Haya Omer, it's important for us to look at the Mishnah beforehand to figure out who the person that's speaking now is. Hu Haya Omer means the same person that spoke in the last Mishnah is still continuing to speak now. So the Mishnah tells us that every human being is considered special, but then the end of the Mishnah says, Chaviv in Yisrael, Shenikru Banim Lamakum. Klal Yisrael is considered extra special above and beyond everybody else. Shenikru banim lamakum. We are called the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chibe Yisrael nadaslam, shenikru banim lamakum, shenemar banim atem lahashem elokechem. So here we have a very nice Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva tells us we are called the banim lamakum. Now, very often in Pirkei Avos, when we deal with certain cryptic sentences, certain messages that are given to us by certain Tanaim, it behooves us to really figure out why it is that this Tana felt it was so important to teach us this one lesson in his life. The Tana didn't tell us everything. He didn't go ahead and write a Musar Sefer. The Tana very often just gives us one beautiful sentence that somehow encapsulates a lot of his thought process, a lot of his psychology, a lot of what he thought was important to focus on in life. So we have to figure out what is it about Rabbi Kiva that really pushed him to tell us that this is such an important idea, this is so essential in the Jewish thought, in the Jewish psychology, to understand that banim atem lahashem elokechem. So let's just give a little bit of background into who Rabbi Kiva was. Rabbi Kiva lived through the generation of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, it was a great sense of depression, of dejection in that time. People felt as if the Ribbono Shel Olam forgot about them. Everything was lost. And Rabbi Kiva was the one who really stood up and encouraged, and he supported, he inspired the generation to really feel that they could move on and that life would continue even after the Churban. In fact, we have two Gemaras in Makos Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph, which is number 2. We're not going to read them inside, but just for your own reference. So the Gemara tells us two very interesting stories, and on the face value, it's very puzzling the way these stories pan out. First story that the Gemara says is Rabbi Kiva finds himself with a group of 5 Tanoim, and you'll look through different Mekoros and Chazal, you'll find that these 5 Tanoim used to take a lot of trips together. Apparently they were doing a lot of speaking with the government, they were doing a lot of political trips, whatever they were doing. And as it turns out, the Gemara tells us a lot of different stories about these 5 Tanoim and on the different trips and travels that they used to have throughout the different years when they were taking care of different businesses in the government. So over here we have a story where they're all traveling on the road and they see 100 miles away from Rome, they begin to hear, obviously they couldn't see, but they begin to hear a big commotion, a big tumult in the distance. So all the Tanoim begin to cry and Rabbi Kiva begins to laugh. So the Tanaim asks Rabbi Kiva, what are you laughing about? So Rabbi Kiva responds, what are you crying about? So Rabbi Kiva tells them finally that the reason I'm laughing is because if this is the way the Ribbono Shel Olam allows, if this is the way the Ribbono Shel Olam allows those who don't listen to what he says, those who don't listen to what he wants, this is the way he allows them to enjoy life and to enjoy themselves. Imagine what's in store for us. Yes, we experience the Khurban. Yes, things are terrible. Yes, things don't look good. But bottom line, imagine what's in store for us down the line when the Ribbono Shel'olam will actually put us back on our feet and make Klal Yisrael as wonderful and as glorious as they used to be. Okay, that's story number one. Story number two, the Gemara there says, is even more puzzling. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, so they're taking a trip and they pass by Har HaTzofim. Now Har HaTzofim is the place where you're able to see into the Makom HaMikdash. So here they are, they pass by the Makom HaMikdash and they look down and they see it's absolutely in shambles. The whole Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The place of the Mikdash is absolutely bare, desolate, it's empty. And over there, the Gemara says that all the Tanaim began to cry. Because how could it be that they're watching, there are animals roaming around in the Makom HaMikdash, they all begin to cry, Rabbi Kiva begins to laugh. They all ask Rabbi Kiva, what are you laughing about? So he responds to them, it seems a little inappropriate, what are we laughing at when we see the Makom HaMikdash absolutely desolate, destructed, everything's terrible. Rabbi Kiva explains, the reason I am laughing is because if God promised us that there's going to be a Churban, and he told us that things are going to be terrible, and that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, and there will be Shualim Hilchubo, there will be animals roaming around, well, you can rest assured that the other Nevuah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us also, which is Od Yeshu Zekenim Zekenes Berechobes Yerushalayim, will also come true. There will come a time when all of us will come back into Yerushalayim in droves, and we will once again see the Beis HaMikdash in its glory. So Rabbi Kiva says, once I see that part A of the Nevuah came to fruition, I am assured that part B will come to fruition as well, and I have nothing to be concerned about. This is why Rabbi Kiva was laughing. So you see, Rabbi Kiva is the type of personality who can give comfort, reassurance, and he sort of was able to give solace to a community that really was going through a terrible state of Churban. Let's take another very interesting story, which we all are familiar with. That is the story in the Haggadah. We all know that there are five Tanoim who are sitting together on Pesach night, and where they choose to have the Seder, what does it say in Bnei Brak? So let me ask you the following question. Who is the Rebbe and who is the Talmud? So if you look in different Mishnayos and Gemaras, you'll find that Rebbe Lazar was the Talmud, was the Rebbe of Rebbe Kiva. Right? Rebbe Lazar was the Talmud of Rebbe Kiva. Where did Rebbe Lazar live? Anybody know? The Gemara says Rebbe Lazar lived in Lud. Okay, so Rebbe Lazar is living in Lud. Yet if we look in the story in the Haggadah Shal Pesach, we are told that these five Tanoim did not choose to go to the Rebbe's house in Lud. Rather, they all chose to go to Rebbe Kiva's house in Bnei Brak. What's this all about? And not only did the other Tanoim decide to go to Rebbe Kiva, the Rebbe himself, Rebbe Lazar, traveled from Lud to go spend the Seder by Rebbe Kiva. Is this appropriate? Is this appropriate that everybody should travel not to the Rebbe's house, but rather we should travel to the Talmud's house to fear a Seder by the Talmud? It doesn't make any sense. So one of the Mefarshim explains beautifully that perhaps imagine the psyche, imagine what was going on in the minds and the hearts of this generation. Here they are, they just experienced the Churban. Just almost a year later, after the first Tisha B'Av, right? The first Tisha B'Av is when it was destroyed. Now, almost a year later is Pesach time, and the Ribbono Shel'olam says, Man Chayruseinu, everyone should feel that you're free, everyone should feel that life is amazing, everything's great. How can we possibly feel a sense of Chayrus at a time when we just experienced the greatest tragedy, the greatest calamity that has ever befell the nation? How can they feel such a thing? What's the appropriate response? How can one possibly get himself to that level where he's going to feel that experience of Chayrus even at a time of destruction? Well, the only obvious answer I can think of is, let's go spend the Seder night by Rabbi Kiva's house. Rabbi Kiva is the one who offers comfort. Rabbi Kiva is always the one who reassures everybody, and therefore even Rabbi Lazar himself, the Rebbe of Rabbi Kiva, decided he was going to travel that very year to have the Seder by Rabbi Kiva's house because Rabbi Kiva is the one who was able to give comfort to the Jewish people at a time of terrible suffering and terrible mourning. There is another story Rav Soloveitchik points out. My father likes to say this over from Rav Soloveitchik, that the Gemara tells us in Yuma, a famous Gemara, Amar Rabbi Kiva Ashreichem Yisrael. Rabbi Kiva says, Klal Yisrael, you are so praiseworthy, you're lucky. Lifnei mi atem mitaharim, umi mitahareshem. Who takes care of you? Who is going to be mitar you? Who's going to purify and sanctify you? Says Rabbi Kiva, Avichem Shabashamayim. Nothing to fear. Rabbi Kiva tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the one who will take care of everything, who will be mitaras, who will purify and sanctify Klal Yisrael, and everything will be wonderful. Well, Rabbi Kiva is the one living through the Zman of the Churban. Imagine, it used to be in the time when I did an Aveira, I knew that my life could continue. I brought a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, I did the appropriate steps of tshuva, and then my life moved on. But imagine, this generation living through the Zman of the Churban, imagine what they feel the first time they do an Aveira after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. They're going to feel their life is over. They're going to feel like they have no chance anymore. I can't bring a carbon. There's no way to get myself out of the mess that I got myself into in the first place. So imagine the feelings that are streaming through their heads at the time, right after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. How are they supposed to live on? How are they supposed to continue after feeling such terrible feelings of dejection, of loss, and of almost the giving up on their own lives? Well, therefore Rabbi Kiva comes along, the one who's always reassuring them, and Rabbi Kiva says to them, Ashreichem Yisrael, you have nothing to worry about. Lifnei mi atem etar, bottom line, who's taking care of you? It's Avichem Shebashamayim. It wasn't the Karbanos, it wasn't the Beis HaMikdash, it wasn't everything else. It was Avichem Shebashamayim. And that Av, that father is still around. That Avichem Shebashamayim, your father in heaven, is still here. And there's nothing to worry about. There is life even after the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So Rabbi Kiva was one of these personalities. You know, we have a lot of great leaders in Klal Yisrael, but not always is the great man or the great thinker considered an absolute visionary, somebody who carried a generation through a calamity, somebody who carried a generation through a very difficult time. And in fact, the Medrash does tell us, the Sefri says in Parshas Devarim, that there were a couple of famous people, famous personalities, who lived a chayim of 120 years. They lived a lifetime of 120 years. Obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu is the obvious example. Moshe Rabbeinu lives 120 years, which seems to tell us that 120 is the pinnacle of perfect existence. The pinnacle of Shleimus, a person who actually accomplishes in his life, who does everything he's supposed to do, lives 120 years. So there are a couple of personalities, as Sefri tells us, who did live 120 years, but one of those happened to be Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva was distinguishing himself his whole life from the rest of the group of Tanoim, and it seemed very clear that Rabbi Kiva was not just a regular Tana, he wasn't just a great man, he wasn't just a leader, but he was a real visionary. He was a person who really understood what the needs of the generation were and how to appropriately respond to those needs and carry them through the difficult time they were living. So now let's look and try to figure out why it is that this is so important, an idea of Chaviv in Yisrael Shenikru Banim Lamakum. Why does Rabbi Kiva feel the need to tell us that it's important to think about the fact that we are Banim Lamakum, we are children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why is this something that he feels is most important to share with us in the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos? So if you look at Rabbi Yosef Engel in his Beis HaOtzer, Rabbi Yosef Engel has a beautiful set of Svarim Beis HaOtzer, so he writes over there that in fact there is a discussion in some of the Achronim. He quotes the Maharal, writes like this, but it's a discussion in other Achronim as well. What is the closest relationship a person can ever have? What is the closest relationship a person can ever have? Child and his father, child and his parent. So Rabbi Yosef Engel writes, obviously it's a child and a parent. It's not a brother and a sister. It's not a husband and wife. And those are all very wonderful. But bottom line, Rabbi Yosef Engel says, the closest connection a person can ever have is the connection between a parent and a child. Now, one can still wonder which connection is closer. Is the connection from the parent to the child closer? Or is the connection from the child to the parent closer? Which one is stronger? So there's a famous story they say about the Kotzke Rebbe, that one time an older man came to him and he said, look, I had 10 children, I raised all my kids, and I took care of everybody, and I was working my head off my whole life to support them, and I was sending them to yeshivas, I was paying the tuitions, I was doing everything I could, and now I'm an old man, nobody's taking care of me, all my 10 children live around the corner, they all live near me, nobody cares about me, nobody's washing my laundry, nobody's making food for me, I can't understand what's happening. How could it be? So the Kutzker said to him, you're right, your children are rotten, it's a good point. But bottom line, the Kutzker told him, I want you to understand that this is not just a phenomenon that you find by your own children. This is something that's actually in the Bria. The Kutzker pointed out, if you look in the Psukim, when Binyamin was taken down to Mitzrayim, and they wanted, that Yosef wanted to keep Binyamin in Mitzrayim, he wanted to kidnap him, he wanted to put him in jail, and the brothers did not yet know what was happening. So what's the argument that the brothers put forth in order to keep Binyamin and bring him back home? What do they say? Right? If our father, Yaakov Avinu, the old man Yaakov, is going to see that our younger brother is not coming home, so he's going to die. He's going to die from aggravation. Well, Rashi points out on Chumash that at this point, Binyamin already had 10 little kids at home. So why didn't they advance the argument to Yosef and say what? You should allow Binyamin to come home because he has 10 little Yisraelim that are going to be living at home without a father. That's what the Kotzker pointed out. Why don't they advance that argument? Why don't they say you should let Binyamin go home because bottom line, he has 10 kids at home who are not going to have a father to raise them? The answer is, said the Kotzker, because that doesn't pull at the heartstrings. The worst possible thing you could do to a person is if a person is a father to take his child away. That's much more powerful. It's much worse than for children to lose their father. The worst thing in the world is for a parent to lose a child. It's a lot worse than having 10 little kids at home losing their father. And therefore, said the Kotzker, yes, you're right that your children should be taking care of you and should be doing everything they can to care for you, but this is, what can we do? This is human psychology. This is the way it is. There is one of the Chassidish Rebbes, the Ostrava Rebbe, said before the Second World War, so he was famous for saying that this is not just a phenomenon that we find, this is actually something that was put into the Teva, something that was put into the Bria. Why? Because we know all of human feelings and emotions are not something that we just evoke on our own. It's not something that we come up with out of nowhere. It's something that really was created from Sheshes and Hebereshes. These are all feelings and thoughts and emotions that were created in the time of Adam HaRishon. Well, the Ostrava Rebbe pointed out that Adam HaRishon did not have a father. Adam HaRishon only had the relationship of children, of nurturing his children. So therefore, the Ostrava Rebbe pointed out, this is already in the Teva, in the Bria, that everybody feels the love to their children. But it's not natural for a person to understand that he should love his parents as much as they love him. That's what the Ostrava Rebbe pointed out. And in fact, I don't know if we're up on the news, but 2 weeks ago there was a law that was passed in China. Everybody aware of this? Yeah. Right? There was a wild law that was passed in China that a person must visit their parents. What was that? Yeah, a wild thing. You have to pass a law that a person has to go ahead and visit his parents. I mean, a person doesn't understand that if a parent needs their help, you should go ahead and visit them. The answer is no. It's not a given. It's not a given that children understand the importance and the vital role that they can play in their parents' lives. That's not something that we take for granted. It's something that, in fact, not everybody understands on their own. It's something that a lot of people need to be reminded of. So that is with regard to that relationship. And this, Rabbi Yosef Engel points out, is the closest relationship a person can have is a parent and a child. But of those two people, obviously the parent feels extremely close to the child, closer than the child feels to the parent. So why did Rabbi Kiva find this Mishnah to be such an important idea to share with us in the Pirkei Avos? So the B'nai Yisachar writes a beautiful idea in the B'nai Yisachar Ma'amarim Chodesh Tishrei, and he opens up with the following question. If you look at number 4, so we have a Gemara in Ksuvos Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph that says the following: Melech Shemachal Al Kavodo, Ein Kavodo Machal. Says the Gemara, what does this mean? A king who decides to forego his own honor, a king who decides that somebody who has done something wrong to him, a king who decides just to pardon him and allow it to slip by the wayside, to fall by the wayside, he does not have that right to make that decision or to make that choice. Why? Because the king, in fact, is larger than life. He represents a lot more than himself. He represents what? He represents the whole kingdom, the whole community. So he doesn't have a right to just say, oh, this person is my friend, I'll let him go. What? What?
The covet is not his.
The covet is not his. He's representative of a lot more than just himself, so he doesn't have a right to be mochel on his covet. Well, if that is in fact the case, ask the B'nai Yisachar, then what right do we have to ever do tshuva? A frightening question. Ask the B'nai Yisachar, we have done something wrong to the Melech Malchei Hamlachim. He set down the rules. He told us what's okay and what's not okay. He told us what we're allowed to do, what we're not allowed to do. Ask the B'nai Yisachar, if in fact, Melech Shemachal Al Kavodo, Ein Kavodo Machal, a king does not have a right to forego his honor, well then what right does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to ever accept our tshuva? This is a question that the B'nai Yisachar deals with, and it's a very powerful question when you think about it. Imagine we have a world without tshuva, where would we be? Just imagine that for a minute.
Melech because it says some tostim olechasimos harbe.
Right.
That's the reason.
Uh-huh.
Because the simos harbe, it's a pasuk in the
third. Right. So many rishonim, you're correct, but many rishonim deal with the question, why is a melech not able to be mochel? So most of the rishonim explain.
Because the simos harbe, because when he's mochel again, there's another simo. Mm-hmm. That's why the Torah says some tostim.
Right.
An extra word of tostim. teach us when he's mindful, then there's another obligation to give him covet.
So you're absolutely right. He's 100% correct. But when the Rishonim flesh out the halacha, when the Rishonim talk about why there's an inyan, what's the issue? Why is there an issue? So yes, they point out your pasuk, but they also point out that the melech is just larger than life. He's more representative of just himself, and he doesn't have a right just to allow his covet to be shunned by the wayside. So in fact, the Bnei Yisachar points out a very startling chiddush. Bnei Yisachar points out the Medrash Tanchuma, and he says the Medrash Tanchuma writes in Parshas HaZinu a very, very startling chiddush. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, and we have a lot of questions on this from Nach. In fact, the city of Nineveh is going to be a big question, but the Medrash Tanchuma writes that there's no such concept of tshuva by the Umas HaOlam. The idea of tshuva only exists by Klal Yisrael. Which is a very problematic statement, because we know that Nineveh was a city, a whole city of Umas HaOlam. It was a whole city of non-Jews. In fact, we learned a lot of the halachas of tshuva from Nineveh. So how can one claim, this is Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has this kasha in the Kovetz Igros, so how can it be that a person can claim, how can the Medrash claim that there's no such thing as tshuva for the Umas HaOlam, but there's only tshuva for Klal Yisrael? Okay, so we have a serious question. But, be it as it may, the Medrash does tell us that there's only an opportunity of tshuva for Klal Yisrael. There is no opportunity of tshuva for the Umas HaOlam. Very good, thank you. So that's exactly leading us into our next point. Thank you very much. That leads us right in. Says the Bnei Yisachar, why is it that there's only an opportunity of tshuva for Klal Yisrael, not for the Umas HaOlam? Well, the answer is as follows. Because the Gemara tells us, Melech Shemachal Al Kvodo, Ein Kvodo Machal. A Melech is never allowed to forego his honor. He's never allowed to let people step on him or do something wrong. That can never pass by a Melech. However, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, if you look at number 5, the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Lamed Beis, Av Shemachal Al Kvodo. A father who decides that he's going to forego his honor. A child did something wrong to a parent. Kavodah machal. A parent always has things that children do that the parent wishes they didn't do. But the parent always excuses the child. Almost always. So the parent does have the right to make that choice. The parent does have the right to say that he's mochel his son, he's mochel his daughter, he's mochel the child. So therefore, just as we just heard, the reason why we have an opportunity to ever do tshuva in our lives is because we are not only the servants, we are not only the avadim of the melech, we are also the banim lamakom. We are also the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And av shemachal al kvodo, kvodo machal. A parent who chooses to forego his honor, that mechila actually exists and that mechila actually works. The Bnei Yisachar takes this one step further and he writes a beautiful insight. And that is, if you look in the Psukim in the times of the 40 years that Klal Yisrael lived in the Midbar, so the Psukim tell us that they had three different nisim, three different miracles that happened throughout the years in the experience in the Midbar. Nes number 1 was what? The Nes of the Mon. Nes number 2 was Anani HaKavod. Nes number 3 was the Be'er Miriam. Well, as the Bnei Yisachar and the Chida has this kasha in the Nachal Kedumim, a lot of Acharonim have this famous kasha, why is it that as far as the Torah is concerned, we only have one commemoration for all three of these miracles? Yes, we have Lacha Mishnah on Shabbos, which is based on the Man. Okay, that's an Asmachta. But why is it that in the Psukim in the Torah, we only find one commemoration to all of these three mitzvahs? What is that? On Sukkot, we have the Anani HaKavod. Sukkot is supposed to be Kibas Sukkot, so Shafti is Bnei Yisrael, Bo'otzio, some Eretz Mitzrayim. Sukkot is meant to remind us of the Anani HaKavod. Why is it that the Anani HaKavod have a greater significance than the Man and the Be'er? What's the difference? Why is Anani HaKavod any more special than the other two miracles that we had in the Midbar? Well, says the Bnei Yisachar, if you look in many different Psukim and Chumash, we are told that, let's just back up for a second. The Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, which is over here, number 6, the Mishnah says when you have a king, so I'm not allowed, a subject in the Malchus is never allowed to use the chariot of the king, he's never allowed to use the horses, any of the beds, the tables, the chairs, I'm not allowed to use anything that belongs to the king, I'm not allowed to use anything that the king himself uses for his personal things that he needs. So therefore, the Bnei Yisachar points out, if you look in the Psukim, it seems to say that the chariot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the Anani HaKavod. In Parshas Yisro, we are told, Hine Enochi Ba'i Lecha Be'av Ha'anan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm coming to visit you Be'av Ha'anan. I'm coming to visit you in a cloud. Another pasuk says, Hashem rochev al avkal uba Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu traveled in a light cloud, and he came to Mitzrayim to perform the makos. Well, if this is in fact the case, that the clouds are the chariot, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then what right do we have to use the Anani HaKavod upon leaving Mitzrayim? What right do we have to use the Anani HaKavod upon coming out of the Yamsuf? We should have been subject to this halacha that no one is ever allowed to use the chariot of a king. What right do we have to ever make use of the Anani HaKavod? Well, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing to worry about. With Klal Yisrael, I'm not just the melech. With Klal Yisrael, I'm the father. With Klal Yisrael, you're my children. Does a father allow his son to borrow his car? Obviously. So then there's nothing wrong with Klal Yisrael borrowing the chariot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and going to ride in the clouds, having the experience of the Anani HaKavod. Says the B'nai Yisachar that there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's something that's okay by any means. That's something that everyone will agree is fine. And therefore, says the B'nai Yisachar, this had so much more significance than the nace of the man and the nace of the be'er. Yes, we needed those to live and they were essentials. But over here, the Ribbono Shel Olam was telling us, you are my children. The whole thing, the whole allowance that you have to use the clouds in the first place is only because you are banim lamakom. And with this, we can understand, says the B'nai Yisachar, why Yom Kippur and Sukkot are one right after the other. The whole idea of tshuva is predicated on the fact that we are banim lamakom. As we said, if you're not children to the father, then you don't have an opportunity to do tshuva. Melech shemachal akvodo, ein kvodo machal. He doesn't have a right to be mochalas. But then the Ribbono Shel Olam teaches us, don't worry, you're my children. Banim lamakom. And since you're my children, there's a way out of this. I can be mochal you. Av shemachal akvodo, kvodo machal. And therefore, immediately following Yom Kippur, we are followed up by a sukkah, which reminds us of the whole heter of the Anani HaKavod was only because you're banim lamakom. That's why we're reminded right after Yom Kippur with the sukkah. It comes to put it in our face to tell us, don't worry, you're the banim lamakom. Everything's reassured, everything's okay. And your tshuva will actually be niskabel. In fact, I just want to point out, what time are we supposed to go until? Right, we need 72 minutes because we need a bench. So, I think it's a very interesting insight. If you look into the Nusach of Shemona Esrei, now obviously there are some people in the room, I would imagine, who daven Nusach Svard. But for those who daven Nusach Ashkenaz, so you'll look through the Shemona Esrei and you'll find that only two of the brachos in all of Shemona Esrei do we use the phraseology of Avinu. Where is that? Hashiveinu Avinu l'sarasecha, slach lanu Avinu ki chatanu. One you say, we all need a refuah. One you cry out, Rifuainu Avinu! We need to be saved. Everybody needs a parnasanu, Baruch aleinu Avinu! Help us out, Father! Well, over here, if you don't believe in the concept of yourself being a child, if you don't believe that you are the banim lamakom, if you don't believe that he's your father, then you don't get off the ground. The conversation of tshuva, the conversation of slicha doesn't even begin. The whole idea of tshuva and slicha is only predicated on the fact that we believe that we are the banim lamakom, and then the conversation can continue. That's why it's of most importance for us to think at a time of tshuva and slicha and those brachas in Shemona Esrei, it's a time for us to point out that yes, we're the banim lamakom and he is our father, and it's only because of that that we have an opportunity to ask Hashiveinu Avinu. It's only because of that that we have the opportunity to say Slach lanu Avinu ki chatanu. Famous story with the Chayza Milublin, that one time there was an individual, the Chayza was a big bal tzedakah, although he probably didn't have a lot of money, but he used to give away a lot of his money. So just to put it in layman's terms, in ways that we can understand it, so the Chayza, apparently a regular person would come and ask for a tzedakah, he would give him a $100 check. A relative who came to him and told him he was making a chasana, he needed money, so he gave him a $1,000 check. Okay, that's what he used to do. So one day an individual walks into his office and he says to him, Rebbe, ich bin a karev, I'm a relative, please, I'm making a chasana, can I have some money? So, he writes him a $100 check. So, the guy's beside himself, I don't understand. I told you I'm a relative. So the chayza says, how are you related? She says, well, my aunt's, uncle's, brother-in-law's, cousin's, wife, second wife, third wife, was related to your wife's great-grandfather, so that makes us related. So the chayza tells him, excuse me, du bist a weiter karev. That's too far. My rule that I give $1,000 for a relative is only to those that I actually am considered related to. But he said, your relation to me is way too far. I'm not going to give you $1,000. I only give you $100. Okay, so the chassid is beside himself. He collected a lot of money for the chasana, but now he's $1,000 short. He's $900 short. He thought he would make the extra money from the chayza. And now, he was turned away. The chayza told him that he's too far of a relative. So, he walks out of the room, and obviously the gabayim see that he's very sad. So they said, you know, we give you an etzah. Come to shul tomorrow morning. Stand right behind the chayza when he's davening Shmona Esrei. And you know what? When he gets up to the bracha, the first bracha in Shmona Esrei, and he says, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, you should yell out, Du bist avayte karov. You're not so closely related to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Okay, a little chutzpahdik, but what can he do? He needs the money. Comes to shul the next morning, and the chayza, he goes to daven right behind the chayza. The chayza is standing there, davening Shmona Esrei, a little bit in a way that people can hear, and gets up to Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. This chassid stands right behind him. He says, Du bist avayte karov. So the chayza is like taken aback. He can't believe it. Turns around and he sees it's this person. And he understands what the message was. So after davening, he writes him out $1,000 check. He says, you're right. I didn't treat you nicely. Gives him $1,000 and he's on his way. So one of the later chassidim who heard the story said it's a Hele Gemaisa, and obviously the Chayza gave him Tzedakah, and it's very nice, but he said, that's not a good Kasha. Yes, we can have relatives that are considered very distant. Yes, we can have relatives, and it's an aunt's, uncle's, cousin, second cousin, whatever, third marriage, second marriage, that's very distant. But a father is a father. Doesn't matter how far you feel, how distant a person might distance himself from a father, the bottom line is a father is always a father. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, as far as we are, as far as we may have put ourselves from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we are still the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and a father is a father. A father is a father. Doesn't matter. So therefore, when we feel at a time now of Churban, at a time of destruction, it's a good time to remind ourselves as well that we in fact are the Banim LaMakom, we in fact are the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and it's what for us to actually take comfort in. And as much as sometimes we might distance ourselves from the Shekhinah, as much as sometimes we might make ourselves feel a little bit far away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't always do the right thing. We don't always follow in what He tells us to do. We don't follow in the footsteps. But yes, it's still the time for us to think about the fact that He's our Father. A father is a father, and there's no such thing as a vayta karov when it comes to the relationship between a parent and a child. There's no such reality. So the Marsha asks, in that original Gemara that we began with in Makos Daf Chav Dalet, you have these five Tanoim who go and they experience the Churban. They see the Makom HaMikdash is desolate. They see it's empty. So Rabbi Kiva is laughing. Very nice. Rabbi Kiva gave an explanation why he laughed. But the Marsha in that Gemara asks, don't we know that there's Hilchos Avelus? Don't we know a person is supposed to rip Kriya when he sees the Makom HaMikdash? So yes, he gave a very nice, fluffy answer, Rabbi Kiva, and it's great, and we feel good, and everyone patted themselves on the back. But what about the fact that you have a mitzvah to rip kriya? What about the fact that there are protocols of what a person is supposed to do when he sees a makam churban, a makam of destruction? What's going on here with Rabbi Kiva? Well, answers the Marsha that Rabbi Kiva, yes, he ripped kriya, he was noyig abelos, he did everything he was supposed to do, but at the same time he was laughing. Rabbi Kiva was able to compartmentalize and understand that there's a breakdown. That sometimes we have to feel, on the one hand, the simcha, the closeness, the ava, and on the other hand, sometimes we have to feel the avelus, but that's not a contradiction. A person can understand that there's two pieces to every puzzle. A person can understand that there's a double feeling that's supposed to be running through his head at a time when he experiences churban. It's not just to focus on the horrible experiences that one has lived through. It's not just to look at the terrible destruction that one sees in front of his eyes, but it's also to understand that there is some salvation, there's some sort of reassurance in all of that as well. And where did Rabbi Kiva learn this from? Well, if you look, there's a beautiful Gemara. The Gemara tells us, I'm sorry, the Medrash says, that at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim, so it says, Bikshu Malachi Asharis Lo Mashira. It says the Malachim experienced this tremendous experience, this Yeshua, that Mitzrayim was Mesal Svasayam. And says the Medrash that the Malachim responded, they wanted to sing Shira. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Maisa Yadat Tavim Bayam Ve'atim Amrim Shira. That's inappropriate. There's a time of destruction. Everybody just died. How can you go and sing Shira? My Heilige creatures, my Helig and Mitzrayim, however you want to say that, but my creations just were destroyed, everything was killed out. How can you go ahead and sing Shira? It's inappropriate. Well, I ask you the following question. How did Klal Yisrael sing Shira when they came out of Mitzrayim? Isn't that the same problem? How is it appropriate for Klal Yisrael themselves to sing Shira? So there are many answers given, and obviously the answer that many say is that, well, if I was the one who was saved, that's a different story. The Malachim weren't saved, they're just outsiders, okay. But one beautiful insight given by Reb Zalman Sarutzkin is the following. Says Reb Zalman Sarutzkin, if you look in the Psukim and Navi, we are told about Malachim. Malachim are called Omdim. Malachim only have one tafkid in the world. Malachim don't have challenges, they don't have nisyonos, there's nothing difficult in their lives. Hashem tells them, do one thing in the world, and that's it. Your whole life is just made for this. Well, therefore, when it comes to a malach, and he says he sees a terrible destruction, and he sees the Yeshua, he says, oh, I want to sing Shira. Hashem says, no, it's inappropriate. It's inappropriate to sing Shira at a time when there's destruction in the world. But when it comes to Bnei Adam, when it comes to individuals that can think two-dimensional, three-dimensional, we can think out of the box, we can understand that there could be two feelings that are concurring in our minds at the same time. A person can understand on the one hand, yes, we were saved, yes, there was a Yeshua, and everything's unbelievable, and we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, but at the same time, we can feel the avelus, we can feel the sense of loss, we can understand and appreciate the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has just lost a lot of His creation, that all of Mitzrayim has just been wiped out, and that is something that human beings have the ability to do. We are able to compartmentalize, we are able to break things down in our minds and understand that there's two pieces sometimes to the same puzzle. Sometimes we can understand and appreciate the destruction, at the same time as we understand and appreciate the tremendous bracha and the simcha of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us. In fact, by Moshe Rabbeinu, I just want to close with this. The Gemara tells us in Chagiga, in the beginning of Chagiga, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah, gave it over to Klal Yisrael, but says the Gemara, the last Shmona Psukim Sheba Torah, the last eight Psukim in the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, Kasvan Bedema. And the simple understanding is Moshe Rabbeinu wrote them with tears. So imagine, you have a very emotional sofer nowadays who decides, you know what, I get very emotional all the time, so he starts writing a Sefer Torah with his tears. Would you ever buy such a Sefer Torah? Would you ever learn from such a Sefer Torah? I don't think so. So how is Moshe Rabbeinu's Sefer Torah kosher? How could it be Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the last eight Psukim in the Torah with tears? I don't understand. It's a Pasul of Sefer Torah. Pasul of Sefer Torah. So says the Ma'bit in his Hakdama to the Beis Elokim, a beautiful insight. The Ma'bit writes, Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't mean he wrote them with tears. It means Dema is Miloshen Dimua. We have in Chumash the Lashon Dimua, which means a mixture. So Moshe Rabbeinu is here at the end of his life, and he has very mixed emotions. On the one hand, he says, look at everything I did for Klal Yisrael. I led them through the Midbar. I taught them Kol HaTorah Kula. I was on Har Sinai. I got the Torah for them, and I gave it over, and I did everything. And they complained, and I took care of them, and I was mispalled for them, and I took care of everything for them. So he's proud of everything he's accomplished in his life, but at the same time, he says, Hini Anochi Holech Lamus. That's it. I see Yoshua ben Nun is taking over. My time is up. So imagine the experience of writing the last eight psukim in the Torah was with very mixed emotions, the Ma'bit writes. It was with Dimua. It was Moshe Kasva Medema because he was having both emotions being evoked at the same time. On the one hand, he had a tremendous sense of simcha. He had a tremendous sense of happiness of everything he had accomplished in his life. But on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu says he's about to die and he feels terrible about that. He feels terrible that his opportunity in life is being taken away from him. So here, at this time of year, right before Tisha B'Av, is a time to really appreciate the teachings of Rabbi Akiva. It's a time to appreciate that which Moshe Rabbeinu, Adon HaNaviim, taught us. That at some points in life, a person is supposed to think about the dichotomy. He's supposed to think about the breakdown. That on the one hand, he's supposed to feel the simcha. On the other hand, he's supposed to feel the churban and the avelus. And both of them are appropriate. And not only are both of them appropriate, as the Marsha says, they're both appropriate at the very same time. They're appropriate to feel both feelings of simcha and feelings of churban and sadness at the same exact time, and to understand and appreciate the value of both of them at a time like this when we find ourselves going into a Tisha B'Av. V'yiratzon shenizke bekarov, they have a geula shleima amitis, v'meher v'yameinu, amen v'amen.